Well, welcome back to Fear or Favour after a very short break that we've had for summer. Straight into it, and let's talk about something which of obviously the anniversary of this month, 14th of June 2017, a fire engulfed 24-storey Grenfell Tower, a block of flats in North Kensington, West London. 72 people died, more than 70 others were injured. 223 people escaped. The fire began in or around a hot point fridge freezer in flat 16 and quickly escaped from that flat on the fourth floor to the rest of the building. It spread rapidly upwards and across the eastern side of the building and from there to the north face and to the remaining tower. It engulfed it completely. By 6 minutes past two, London Fire Brigade declared it as a major incident. And at that point, there were some 40 engines either en route or at the scene. Initially, there was a stay put advice, but that was abandoned. And by 4:30 in the morning, the whole building was engulfed with more than 100 flats on fire. Nazir, shocking, horrific. I know you've been down there this week. I went down there within 24 hours and it was still smouldering.
I mean, I was really privileged because I was invited by the families to go to the memorial on the 14th. They had a memorial ceremony at the Westminster Abbey, at which was quite extraordinary how touching it was. I mean, given, you know, 60% were Muslims, you might not think it was the appropriate place, but, you know, it's a place of worship, and the families were there, and it was an immensely touching ceremony. Then in the afternoon, I had another privilege, which was to actually attend an event that they had organized at the foot of the tower itself. People may not know, actually, the tower is still there. It's clad with tarpaulin, etc., and there's some dispute. Some of the families wanted to stay there as a memorial to what happened, but in any event, it's still there. And so they built a platform at the base of the tower, and I was at the ceremony where Prince William and the Duchess of Cambridge came along to lay a wreath, amongst others, the Mayor of London and others. And again, I'll tell you what struck me, actually, Mark, was there were families there looking up at this building where they'd lost everything. I mean, there was one man who lost his wife and all his children, and he's just looking up at them. And what do I say to him? Well, I said to him, you know, if I said to him, "I'm sorry for your loss," that doesn't mean anything, does it, in your circumstances? No. All you can do is sit and listen. What was really striking, another striking element, actually, was that a number of people who came on the stage, and by that I mean leaders, church leaders, imams, etc., one by one, they went on the stage to say, where is the justice? Where are the... In fact, one, the Reverend said, you know, "I've not heard the clink of handcuffs. None of us have." And 5 years on, not one person has been arrested or never mind charged with what happened. There is, as you know, an inquiry taking place, which is it's been going on for 2 or 3 years now, and continues, and it's so far looked at, so the emergency services response. Now it's looking at more of the reasons why this may have happened. And some of our listeners may not know that the cladding that was put on the building was extremely flammable, but was also extremely cheap, and maybe the two were connected. When the council and the owners of the building and others decided to put the cladding on, they decided to cut costs, it would appear, and that undoubtedly contributed to what happened on the night. And so what they were asking for, Mark, was, where is the justice? Who will be brought to justice? When, you know, will we still be alive when someone's brought to justice? And it harkened back to things that you and I have dealt with in the past, whether it was Hillsborough, which took 30 years to get to a state where somebody was charged. At the end of the day, only one person was ever convicted, and that was for a health and safety offence. And so people think, well, hang on a minute, you can do what you like. You can lose life. 72 people masks the fact that 18 children died that night. 18 children. If you remember when Dunblane happened, the terrible events of the Dunblane shooting, 15 children died, and we destroyed everybody's handguns. You know, the government went into overdrive and legislated to prevent it from happening again, to make sure it wouldn't happen again. And even the immediate aftermath of Hillsborough, the football premises were told you need to get rid of standing and you need to put all sorts of things in place. Billions were spent on that. But when it comes down to the cladding issue, which is national, if not international, hardly anything has changed. And there are still really dangerous properties up and down the country. And of course, more importantly, or as importantly, the fact is that nobody has been brought to justice for the events of that night. And no. I think that was the thing that really jumped out at me, was that people were yearning for that. And when I spoke to this one individual who'd lost all his family, I said to him, look, do you think it would make any difference to you if somebody went to jail for what happened to your family? He said, 1%. But 1% is better than nothing.
I think you're right. And I went down there within the first 24 hours after the fire. And I remember watching it on telly as it was unfolding and listening to it. I mean, it was absolutely shocking. And I went down there and I kind of garnished the community's feeling at the time. And I spoke to a lot of people. And interesting enough, people did talk to me. I got to know one of the local residents there who was very supportive and put me in contact with those people who had lost loved ones. And what they wanted was answers. What they wanted was people to be held account because, as you say, the cladding was responsible. But it wasn't just the cladding. There were other aspects of that building which were flawed, which needed attention. For example, the building's smoke extraction system was not working. There was problems with the wet riser and the water-filled pipes running into the buildings in an event for a fire. There was gas pipes that were installed in 2016, which were also a contributing factor, which did not meet regulations. And the flat doors didn't also meet regulations. So there's a combination when you put the cladding with some of these other issues as well. And by and large, all of these issues had been raised to the owners of the property and told them there is a major problem here. And therefore, when I spoke to the residents, they were saying, we just need people to be held to account. Now, that was at the time. Fast forward to today, and still nobody has been held to account. Nobody's been arrested. There's been a huge police investigation. There's now been an independent investigation by the health and safety. And yet nobody has been arrested.
What struck me again when I was there, that Kensington is the richest, or was the richest borough in the country. Mm. But this was the most deprived community in the richest borough in the country. And so the idea that the owners or the council and everybody else couldn't afford this was just nonsense. They made a choice. They made a choice that the most deprived, voiceless people, we've had this conversation about the people who are voiceless, who don't seem to be able to be heard, would not complain. And of course, that meant they could do what they wanted to do that building, cut as costs as wherever they could, whilst just down the road. I mean, I'm walking past 20, 30 million pound properties, residential properties, to get to a building where, as you say, 72 souls lost their lives. And I'm thinking, somebody made a choice. It wasn't by chance. Made choices which allowed these people to die. And that is where responsibility lies. And, you know, what can I say? People were saying to me, why aren't you prosecuting? You know, why? And I said, well, firstly, I'm not a prosecutor anymore. But secondly, then they said, can you come back? And I was thinking, that's the lack of confidence they have in the current system, is they want retirees to return to do
this. Well, I did an investigation for this morning, and we looked at it, and we looked at what we wanted to do was to identify where those failings could be pinpointed. So was there ability to actually identify one or more people who would be held responsible, certainly under health and safety, and possibly even criminal elements? And we found there was. We found very clearly that there were named individuals who'd made decisions in relation to the putting of that cladding on the outside with the knowledge of what was on. And it was a major problem. Yet, even now, those people haven't. And you have to say that the reason that this is not, it hasn't progressed further is because of the type of people that are involved. They're just not prepared to take those people on. Yeah. And I think it's utterly shocking.
It is. And you know, we despair it, because we've said before, the law needs to apply to everybody from the Prime Minister down. And if it doesn't, then it damages the confidence that people have in the whole justice system. You know, I'm there taking it in the neck for the failures of those who are currently operating in this sphere. I'm happy to do that. As you know, I don't mind that. But at the same time, I wish to God they would get their act together. You know, all they had to do was listen to some of those people that I listened to last week that you've had listened to before. As you say, there are named individuals whose responsibility has already been identified. You keep hearing excuses. One of the ones I heard last week was, "Oh, we have to wait for the inquiry to finish." And I was thinking, if you got the evidence, you got the evidence.
Yeah, you do.
And then then they were saying, "Well, we haven't been able to get enough evidence against the main players. We're only going to get the little people." I said, "Well, start with the little people."
Absolutely,
it really beggars belief.
Well, the little people when they're arrested then talk. And they tell you about the big people. So this is this mindset of investigators today, senior investigators today, who are afraid to take action and take action because of the ramifications of the political element of it. It's all drawn up around who you know and what you know, rather than saying, do you know what? Let's stand independent from this. We're as police as health and safety investigators, we have to be impartial. And we are going after the evidence. And where the evidence takes us, we will go. And if that means arresting someone further down the chain, well, you arrest them in the hope that they will then give you further information to go up the chain. Now, if they can't, they're still accountable. There's still enough evidence that they've failed. Take them out. This is a problem for the public, is that the public, for the policing, it has to be seen to be effective.
Justice has to be seen to be done.
Absolutely.
Right.
And it's not. I mean, one thing that came out of my investigation, and it's still something that's a problem today. So you've got 24-story Grenfell Tower. There is not a single platform in the London Fire Brigade or any other fire brigade in this country that can reach the top floor of those flats.
Yep.
Now, that is a major problem. And it is achievable, because if you go to the flats in America, they have got high-rise flats systems, but what we should be doing as a country, haven't they? We've got skyscrapers now.
So,
but there isn't the ability to get to the top floor. So, what we should be saying, you know, this is a joined-up approach. To saying, right, we can't be. Either we don't build buildings as tall as that because of the risk that comes from it. But actually, what we then need to do is get in place a system that allows you to get onto those top floors, because otherwise, these people are just utterly isolated on the top floor.
Yeah, I mean, there was a policy back then, which I think still exists, around stay put, where the families are told, stay in your room, because that's the safest place for you. Because, you know, again, I'm not an architect or a builder, but I can imagine what I understand is that each flat or apartment is self-isolated, built in blocks, so it's relatively safe. But of course, as you say, 24 floors up, it's not going to be as safe as it would be on the fourth floor. And there are issues for every agency and everybody. And I realize that we don't see the pace. There are people right now living in blocks of flats, perhaps listening to our conversation, who aren't safe. And I don't know how we can tolerate that. I don't know how. Do you remember a little while ago, the government was saying to landlords, make it happen. And landlords were then charging the tenants for replacing the cladding, which they themselves had put on. So they put on this cheap flammable stuff and then said to the tenants, right, in order to get it to be able to be safe, you need to pay us £100,000, which, of course, none of them, hardly anybody had, unless they borrow it from some source. It just seems to me that the little person is the one that's paying for all of this. And, lives have been lost, lives will be lost. And I don't get a sense of urgency. We can start by bringing people to justice. We can start by holding people to account. Then, when there are consequences, things begin to change.
Yeah, I mean, up and down the country, there are flats that are unsellable at the present moment in time because of the cladding on the outside. Although in the UK now the government has agreed to provide that funding for properties. Yeah. In Wales, I think it's still going through a process and hasn't been entirely agreed by the Assembly. I think this is a major problem because, of course, during that period of time, these people are living in flats in potential fear that what happens if one washing machine, one fire, one microwave,
you know, where everything is on a knife edge. And there isn't, as I said, we've said, the real urgency about this, as there was in the immediate aftermath of Dunblane. firearms were taken off everybody, were bought off everybody. The law was changed within months, and everything moved on. And that was the right thing to do. In the immediate aftermath of Hillsborough, football grounds could no longer have standing because it wasn't safe. And millions were spent on protecting spectators. These people, unfortunately, the ones in Grenfell and the ones in many other social housing blocks around the country, are just not listened to, not heard. They're poor, to put it bluntly. They're from deprived communities, and there is no sense of urgency around them. And when I heard the names of the 18 children being read out on the 14th of June, and they were all names that you would recognize. Some of them had the same surnames, so they were brothers and sisters. It left an indelible mark on me, and as it should do on everybody. And I was really taken aback by Prince William and the Duchess of Cambridge. They sat through, they listened intently. They really felt what had happened there. It was good of them to turn up and spend time with the families. And, I'm not breaking any protocol here, but the Prince William did applaud all the speakers who were calling for justice. So, if our future king is calling for justice, well, maybe we should pull our finger out and deliver it.
There's two stages to this public inquiry. The first stage has already been undertaken, and it came out with a very critical view in relation to the way the fire brigade handled it. I've spoken to a lot of fire brigade officers. Indeed, I've spoken to the fire brigade union as well. This was an exceptional event for them. And I don't say that in any way to minimize. I think they are all themselves aware that the decision to keep people in their flats or to stay into their flats was the wrong one. Because what we now know is that prior to that decision, a lot of people escaped, but after that decision to stay into the flats, very few people escaped, and that increased the number of deaths within that. But of course, they were having to deal with something in immediacy in front of them and make split-second decisions. What, of course, they didn't know is that some of the fire doors didn't meet standards. They didn't know what was going on in relation to the cladding on the outside. And in fact, I remember talking to one fire officer, and he was saying to me, we just could not believe that the cladding on the outside was catching fire. We just couldn't believe it, and it was spreading it all across the building, and we were ultimately unable to stop it. We were putting water onto the fire, and it just wasn't making any difference. They were faced with something that they'd never ever anticipated and practiced to be able to deal with. It was on a level of
intensity of an enormity.
And I think the problem with that, of course, is it's all well and good criticizing the fire brigade, and I think there was criticism justly due. The fire brigade have addressed that, and they've looked at some of those issues. But ultimately, it wasn't the fire brigade that was responsible for the fire starting and those deaths. That was as a result of the failings and decisions by the, not just the owners of it, but also the authorities that sat behind it. And I'm at pains to understand quite why, because we're not going to see justice, are we? Let's be clear. No. I don't think we're going to see justice.
I mean, if Hillsborough is an example, 30 years it took for anybody to be charged. At the end of the day, one health and safety conviction of some junior member of the society, so to speak. I have to be optimistic, Mark. I mean, let's put it this way. Thankfully, we may have learnt something. Let's put it bluntly. After the memorial service, I committed myself to keeping the police and prosecutors' feet to the fire, which I think is appropriate in these circumstances, to make them realise the sense of urgency. I wish to God, I mean, I spoke to some of the victims. They said they hadn't spoken to somebody from the police or prosecution service for years. You know, just keeping them updated. I think sometimes, even if there's nobody ever convicted, being updated as to how the investigation is going and what obstacles, if any, they may face, rather than using press releases, which is a common occurrence, I'm afraid, really does shame us. They haven't been listened to. They weren't listened to in the run up to the fire. They haven't been listened to in the immediate aftermath. They haven't been listened to in the 5 years since. I'm not going to let it go, and I know you won't either.
No, and let's hope that. I mean, I'm not sure when the current findings are due to be finished in relation to later this year, is it? Yeah. I mean, what a great symbol for this country to have Prince William there. I mean, let's talk a little bit about it. Prince William he's the new generation, isn't he? He really is taking things forward. And I think the public have so much respect for him and so much love for Kate. I mean, the two of them are just a new brand, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we had the Jubilee celebrations while we were off. He's 40 years old now. Can you believe it?
Yeah, no.
I feel ancient because I remember, you know, seeing his mum and dad getting married and all that sort of stuff. And he's 40 years old and, all right, he's balding. He won't admit to it, I'm sure. I'm sure there's a hospital in Turkey that will provide him with services if he needs to deal with it that way.
It's funny because Prince Charles has got lots of hair, but he's lost his hair, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. I mean, I don't quite know how that is. And but anyway, so be it. But you're right. I mean, he's been saying some really good stuff recently. He's coming into his own, William, in terms of maturity, in recognizing his responsibility and role. He's been talking about, in the immediate aftermath of the Windrush celebrations or commemoration, and he again was talking about a more diverse country that we are, and so how we need to reflect, and how he needs to reflect. I think if you remember some weeks ago, he went on a Caribbean tour and didn't enjoy that experience, it seems, because a lot of countries, particularly in the Commonwealth, now see the monarchy as an anachronism, and Barbados has become independent. They all want no longer to have links with Her Majesty. And of course, one has to say this quite bluntly. I think the attachment of much of the Commonwealth is to Her Majesty the Queen, and when she passes, there will be, I imagine, a significant number of countries that no longer want anything to do with the monarchy. But this is where I think William, to a large extent, has recognised that he has to find a new role for the monarchy, and one that is fit for the 21st century. And both he and the Duchess are desperately keen to do that. And I was I don't know what it is. I'm not a royal watcher generally, but when I was sat at the memorial, I was only a few feet away from them. I was watching them intently, I think, just to see. We watch them on telly, don't we? And we don't necessarily know. But there was real humanity there. They weren't there for show. In fact, they didn't tell anybody in advance they were coming. I knew because the mayor told me, but they did not tell anybody in advance they were coming. They'd already spent an hour or two with the families of some of the deceased before the ceremony. They stayed with some children afterwards. It wasn't for show. It was because they believed they have to find a role for the royal family, and he has the compassion that's required, the empathy that's required, the sensitivity that's required in order for
the royal family to continue. He's a brilliant, and we've talked often about role models in our work, but he's a brilliant role model. I mean, I've just finished a Diana program investigation about her death, and as part of that, I've got to speak to people who became very close to Diana, who were very close confidants and friends of Diana, and there was no doubt that she had a heart of gold. She was an absolute passionate person about people. She cared about people. She wanted to spend time with people, and she did.
Yeah,
and I 100%. Think she brought up William and Harry. And she was an instrumental part of their life, and
they've got her in DNA, haven't they? And you can see. I mean, so much of what Her Majesty, Princess Diana was doing, was done in secret. Nobody knew that she was going off to homeless shelters and engaging with impoverished communities, et cetera, et cetera. She'd taken on causes like the HIV cause. People have almost forgotten that. People forget that she made a point of hugging and holding people who were suffering from HIV at a time when HIV was seen as God's disease.
Let me tell you a little story about that. So she went to see the Queen. So Princess Diana would have regular visits and chats with the Queen. She went to see the Queen, and the Queen liked her. They had a kind of understanding between the two of them. They didn't always get on. They didn't always see eye to eye on the positions. But the Queen said to her, "I don't think this is the right charity for you to be involved with and to be working. And this isn't the right cause." And Diana firmly disagreed and said this is absolutely the right one. And this, she was talking about AIDS, her work with AIDS. And she came away afterwards and she spoke to somebody and she said, look, she was really sad and disappointed that the Queen had taken that position. But for her, it just cemented even more for her reasons to work forward. And she was undoubtedly instrumental in getting AIDS to be something that people didn't perceive to be a dirty and a horrible illness that you couldn't go anywhere near. She was the person that started shaking people's hands. She was the person that started hugging people in hospital who had AIDS. She removed the barriers that existed prior to that. And I think we forget the impact AIDS had around that time, how many people it was killing. Today, obviously, it's fully treatable. But in those days, it wasn't. You know, it took away a lot of people's lives. And she was instrumental in that. And I think we forget the power that she had and what an amazing lady she was.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we've said, her children are continuing that legacy. And, we really should commend them for doing that. I mean, you know, people will say, hang on a minute, they're wealthy and they're rich and all that sort of stuff. But I know a lot of wealthy and rich people who couldn't give a toss about anybody else. So I think let's put it bluntly, there is a role for the monarchy in going forward. And it's William and Harry are the ones who modernize it in the way that it needs to be modernized. So it touches the people that really perhaps haven't engaged with it previously. And they understand that. And that's something that will have to change. But they lead the change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're amazing people. Well, I think Grenfell is obviously our main topic this week. I hope that there is justice that comes from this. Sadly, the two of us are full of reality. And the reality is that I suspect that certainly the big people will never get caught. They'll get away with it. And they may possibly take some of the smaller people. But I think that is doubtful now.
As I said, I was pessimistic on the day. I'm less pessimistic today, Mark, because I know that I'm going to help them. I know that if I can't make it happen, then at least I've tried. You know, it's really important that the families are listened to and heard. And you know, now they have the royal seal of approval. Maybe things might change.
Yeah. Just give us a sense of that commemorative day. The sense of people. Was it anger? Was it annoyance?
I think 5 years on, I think, yes. Anger, they moved from, obviously there still is deep sadness at what happened, particularly at the base of the tower. It was obvious, palpable what I could feel in the room, feel on that day. But there was anger. And it was coming from people you would normally, there was the local reverend, the local vicar, who you would not imagine. You'd imagine he'd be just talking about turning the other cheek and all that sort of stuff. Mm. He was the one that talked about, we haven't heard the clink of handcuffs, you know. And so he's representing and recognizing that his family, his communities, haven't moved on and won't move on until something happens. And I think, as I say, I didn't see any senior police officer there. The commissioner of a fire brigade was there. I was glad actually nobody wore uniforms, because I think it's quite symbolic that you go to an event like that and you're not in uniform. There were lots of the great and the good had turned up to hear. I just hope that they don't think, well, that's it, we've done it for this year, we'll wait for another 5 years. I hope they realize that people there are expecting to do something with what they heard and what they felt. Let's be assured, I am, and I know you are too.
Well, our thoughts go out to those 72 people who died, their families, their loved ones, and also, of course, to the 70 other people who were injured. And we hope that in time and as soon as possible that they will get some justice and that people will be held to account. It is utterly unacceptable that people should lose their lives and nobody be held to account for such a horrific event which could have been prevented. Nazir, as ever, thank you so much. You look after yourself this week. Please do drop us an email or make contact through our social media platforms. Let us know what you think of our podcast. And of course, do drop us some suggestions of what you'd like to listen to. Please do tell your friends and subscribe to our podcast. Thank you again for listening. Have a safe week and see you next
week. Bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Do please tell your true crime friends, and it's important that you subscribe to our channel. If you've got any thoughts or you just simply want to get in touch, you can do so via our Twitter page, Fear or Favour, or go to our website, www.fearorfavour.com. The series is edited by Martin Kayes, the music by Dylan Epega. Fear or Favour is an original true crime podcast in association with Audioboom.